St. Thomas Aquinas tells us that we come to know and understand God by analogy. The reason being is that God is essentially a mystery, hidden, and not understandable with our basic human intellect. It's not that we don't have a good intellect, but rather, compared with God, well, there's just no comparison. God is transcendent, and really any attempt to know him and his omnipotence, even just to a small degree, would be a poor attempt at best. Furthermore, we only know things through our senses: touch, smell, taste, sight, and hearing. Of course, we can know concepts and ideas, but they are rooted in the physical and material world around us. So when we describe, for example, heaven or hell, we tend to use analogies stemming from our own world, and we make them places or locations. Hell is a place that is a fire, perhaps underground or in a dungeon. And heaven is a place that is lofty, angelic, serene, and perhaps somewhere in the sky. And yet, they aren't places at all. That would presume that they are in our world or akin to our world, and they are not. Here's another analogy. Her eyes are like diamonds. Our quickest response to this comment is that her eyes sparkle, since diamonds refract and reflect light in a way that is pleasing. We could say that she has incredibly beautiful eyes. But that might not be the intent of the analogy at all. The analogy might indicate that the sparkle has much more to do with her getting an idea, or her coming up with a plan, or her holding on to a secret. The sparkle refers more to intellectual activity than aesthetic property. Or are her eyes something like carbon atoms arranged in a variation of face-centered cubic crystal structures? Probably not. But we could say that her disposition was stern or hard or unforgiving, which might not be unlike the crystal structures of a diamond. So you can see that analogies must have intellectual cooperation from the writer to the reader, not just in knowledge, but also in context. Each Sunday at Mass, we recite the Nicene Creed, the I believe in one God. Those of us who were raised Catholic and those of us who are converts can recite it. After all, we reinforce our memory by saying it each and every week. Yet it's still easy to miss a word here or there, and sometimes we forget what's coming next. But somehow our neighbor is still going strong, and then we can fall right back into the recitation as if nothing happened. In Advent of 2011, we got a speed bump when the church clarified the translation and changed the text from "we believe" to "I believe." This forced us to take ownership and responsibility for what we individually believe. Before, the implication was that we as a community believe the creed, but that as I, as an individual, am free to pick and choose what I like. We already, as a community, believe in the creed. After all, we are the church. But with the words, I believe, we say it as a personal profession of faith, meaning that when we say it, we actually have to mean it. It is not merely a liturgical action that we say to separate the liturgy of the word from the liturgy of the Eucharist. Yet, if we were to break down the creed into individual components, line by line, we may find ourselves in a bit of a quandary. What the heck does consubstantial with the Father mean? Or what does precedes mean from the Father and from the Son? Or what does half of those words mean? Can we say, I believe, to things that we don't actually understand? Let me give you an example. As a former security network engineer, I can confidently say something like this. Bear with me. The software token uses the cryptographic token key initialization protocol with a quick response code to securely bind it to a device. I'm pretty certain that most people here have no idea what I'm talking about. But that was my field. And someone in the field of law or medicine or finance or construction or any other arbitrary industry could do the same thing. And although we might be able to pick out a word here or there and recognize it, would we be able to attach the words, I believe, to the beginning of it and make it a profession? I think all of us would have to say no. To say, I believe in the creed means to actually believe, not just in real life, but especially in the context of the liturgy, where God is our witness. The first three I believes in the creed deal with the three persons of the Holy Trinity, the solemnity that we celebrate today. And herein lies our conundrum. Every line that follows the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit clarifies the nature of each of the three persons of the Trinity. Yet our knowledge of the Trinity is severely constrained by our ability to actually know each person. And as I mentioned before, we can only know about God by analogy because of our constricted and limited forms of communication. And furthermore, the church's theological development has been continuous for 2,000 years, meaning that there's been a lot of spilled ink trying to describe and define the Trinity. So unless you or I have spent a lot of time reading the works of theologian after theologian, can we really say, I believe, with any confidence? Again, in all honesty, I think we'd have to say, no. We are not confident because very few of us have the time or energy to peel back the layers of theology in order to reveal the nature of the Trinity. And even then, I think it takes a bit of a savant to grasp certain theological concepts. They're all at the DSPT. But we are confident because of the last part of the creed, which we profess to believe in the one holy Catholic and apostolic church. We believe and trust that the church has handed down the faith to us in fidelity. In that profession, we are essentially saying that we believe that the church, established by Jesus Christ, has the authority in matters of faith and morals. And you're probably thinking, uh-oh, does this reduce us to mere automatons? Restricted in our free will? Are we no longer free to disagree with the church? Well, absolutely not. When you were growing up, did you always agree with your parents? I didn't. But I did trust that they knew what they were doing enough to obey them. And it's not so different with us in our relation to the church. We may not agree, but in our belief, we need to obey. And herein lies our next opportunity. If we declare that we believe in the church, and the church has an understanding of the Trinity, are we good to go? Can we just call it a day and come to Mass every week and remain more or less static in our knowledge of the truths of the faith? The answer depends. Some people do not have the intellectual framework to go beyond accepting God in his omnipotence. But for many others, probably all of us here actually, are mandated to live the faith, which means discovering how we can make the faith the core of our lives. We cannot do that without consciously or even subconsciously digging deeper. But in digging deeper, we must notice that the language of the Bible begins to become more relevant, and not just as stories, but as guideposts. The more we live the faith, the more God reveals his plan to us, especially when we read it at Mass or live our faith through the Mass. Each of today's readings reveal a little bit about the relationships between the three persons of the Trinity, the paternal relationship between the Father and the Son, the filial relationship between the Son and the Father, and the procession of the Holy Spirit from the Father and the Son. And in our current stage or state of life, we may not understand any or all of the readings with clarity. But again, the more we practice the faith, the more the Holy Spirit will reveal this to us. But back to the issue of the Creed. If we cannot trust that the Church has adequately given us knowledge of God, or we feel that it is incapable of doing so, can we even say the Creed? Oh, sure, we can all jump to page 89 in the Missalette and start reciting it, but that really wasn't the question. Can we at Mass, before God as our witness, say all the I believes in truth and honesty? If we can't, or perhaps if we won't, then we would have to say, unfortunately, that we don't share everything in common with the Church. And it's okay if this is the case. Some of us have some serious reflection to do on the teachings of the Church, especially the moral teachings, some of which are very difficult given the state of our society. To profess something is to live that profession freely and abundantly. Doing otherwise cheapens the profession and weakens our ability to commit to anything, even earthly commitments. If we can deny God so easily, what does that say about our relationship with our fellow human beings? We have free will, and it's a power that God has given to each and every one of us. Indeed, it is a gift. But with prayer and help from the Holy Spirit, we can align our will with that of the Church. And the implication here is serious. By not having all things in common with the Church, or having become reconciled with the Church, means that we're not in communion with the Church. And notice how I equated the words common and communion. In point of fact, they're the same word in this context. Receiving the Eucharist at Mass is a sign of being in communion with the Church. That's why they call it communion. So receiving it while at the same time disobeying Jesus and his Church puts our souls at risk. In eternity, as in our lives here on earth, our actions have consequences. And regardless of how we analogize heaven or hell, I'm certain that we'd rather go to one place and not the other. In his mercy, Jesus wants the same thing as well.